Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Jim Ostroff is here, too, ladies and gentlemen. Jim's our good friend, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and he's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and he's here to help us talk a little bit about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hi. Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, everybody.
It's good to have you here, as always. And Jim, the big news, according to Kiplinger, this week is just exactly how fed up and how angry is the American electorate. And so, Jim, that's your mission, should you decide to accept it. What do you think?
I was thinking the tape might self-destruct, but we don't take it lightly on this. But we really do believe that a lot of Americans, a lot of voters, are really pretty much angry and fed up in the government as it exists, as they've seen it over the last number of months and number of years. I mean, I should say, because we've looked into this and believe, like, a majority of people really believe their government is inept in its handling of, could be disaster relief, situation in Iraq as it stands now, on immigration, on spending money and energy. Everywhere you look, people are just sort of saying, we're upset, and we may not take it much longer.
Well, so typically, Jim, since all politics is local, who was it said that? Was it,
Tip O'Neill. Tip O'Neill.
Said,
this is local. Leader of the House.
Yeah. Right, back in the Reagan days.
Right.
He's right about that, and I think what he means is that, you know, the party in power, which right now is the Republicans, gets most of that vitriol, I think, from the electorate. And so that's not good for the Republicans. But since all politics is local, that also means sometimes, you know, I want you to vote your congressman out or your senator out, but I like mine.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And so it just makes for a lot of heat and light and distrust, and certainly, there is great concern by Republicans who are in the majority now in both houses. That
they got the most to lose, don't they?
They absolutely do. They also, but the thing is that actually Democrats have more seats to defend than the Republicans.
Right.
So they do have an advantage there. But, you know, the fact that
the Republicans have an advantage, you mean?
The Republicans have an advantage. But, you know, we have seen before where the electorate just goes and raises that finger and changes everything. And
so the Republicans, are you saying the Republicans have more, they have fewer seats that are being vacated this time?
Right, essentially.
And fewer uncontested seats?
That is correct. And so when you do the hard bean counting, you basically see that the Republican Party in the Senate and the House actually has an advantage in terms of the number of seats that could be overturned. Certainly all in the House could. But, you know, when you look closely here at districts and so-called safe districts or which ones are up, are contested for the first time by both parties, mm-hmm. where an incumbent is leaving. After you work through all of that, generally the Republicans have an advantage, generally. But, of course, the point is that if Americans are in a throwing-out mood, there's really no telling, and nobody is safe. So that's why, but people from both parties are really working very hard over here. Concerned I might lose my job, and excited that, hey, we may have a chance to be in the majority again.
You know, but none of that is going to motivate any of them to try to get along enough to make anything happen this year, is it?
The motivation is really quite the opposite. And, you know, where you would see paint the other guy, the other person, you know, as the you might say, as the bad guy or as the obstructionist. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, we're seeing a lot of, you know, members on both sides of the aisle going and, you know, almost hurling insults at each other and calling them un-American. And also,
well, they may be saying that they want to get things done, but they're not willing to compromise. They're not willing to sit down and roll their sleeves up and make it happen because, for example, the Democrats, I'm sure, as the Republicans have been in the past, they don't want to have anything passed in a positive way that would cause the Republicans to be able to claim a victory.
And it is national politics in that sense, and
at its ugliest.
And it is. It is. Here on something I've been watching for Kiplinger here very closely now, on energy legislation, where you see an inordinate amount of backbiting and maneuvering over here to basically try to get an advantage over the other member, the other party, and it is quite ugly. It is. That's politics.
Well, you know, when you talk about politics being ugly, I try to. I used to think, you know, there was a time when I thought that it couldn't be as, or whenever I think that it can't get any worse than this, all you got to do is go back and study history, and you see a time when it's been just as ugly as it is now. You mentioned off the air, you and I were talking about this. You mentioned during the Civil War, things were pretty ugly. From a standpoint, from an overarching standpoint. And then, of course, back in 1804, a couple of our top politicians dueled. You know, they dueled it out, and one of them died. Alexander Hamilton was killed.
That's right.
And of course, if you read any of the issues between Adams and Jefferson, that was some pretty vitriolic words that those guys made at each other.
Oh, it was very vitriolic. But on the whole, you might say, you know, today with so much more at stake here and really so many more complex issues and so much more that could be decided ultimately one way or another and have consequences for many years, even decades, there's nearly unrivaled partisanship, bickering, and frankly, stalemate.
And it seems to be also not only at the political level, but at the electorate level. It seems like maybe more than any other time since the Civil War,
right?
The U.S. is divided.
Good point, Jim.
Politically.
Good point.
Hold on to that thought, Jim. Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, and I will be right back after these messages. We're going to take a quick break. We've got to pay some bills. We've got a lot more to come, a lot more good stuff from Kiplinger. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff, and he's with the Kiplinger Editors, associate editor there with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, we're talking about politics. We're talking about what are the chances of the Democrats to gain in November? What are the chances of the Republicans to lose? And, of course, whatever happens bad between now and then is probably going to be more expensive to the Republicans, and maybe the good, if there are any good things. I guess I'm reminded of something that the Steve Forbes quoted. I'll tell you that I heard this from Steve Forbes probably about a year or so ago, maybe a couple of years ago, probably before the last presidential election. You know, I was asking him, and he reminded me about what Chamberlain said to an aide, Prime Minister Chamberlain, in England. His aide said, "Sir, what do you think will be the deciding factor in the next election?" He said, "Events, my dear boy, events." And so, with all of the nuances and all of the concerns about whether people stay home or not, and if they stay home, that'll probably hurt the Republicans, and all the other stuff going on, there are a number of things that could happen that are in the category of events that could turn everything upside down, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. If you can look at, for instance, even Iraq, if situation there deteriorates a lot more. I mean, that is for the if you're looking just hard election politics, that is a negative. But you might say, okay, a negative for Republicans because of the right. party in power and the president is a Republican. But then again, there are a lot of Democrats who are not all that, would not be all that happy about that turn of events because they very enthusiastically supported U.S. efforts in Iraq earlier, and it's hard for them to extricate themselves on that.
But well, the other thing that could happen would be, and maybe this is where you're going, go ahead, is if the government gets their act together over there.
Well, I'm saying, or the other possibility that things go good and the Iraqi government does get its act together, does manage to put down these various partisan or insurrections, and at which point, the stocks rise for a number of members of the GOP and even some Democrats who would say, yeah, I supported it.
Right.
And there are just so many other things here. If the economy, very much so, there's concern maybe, who knows, the economy could falter substantially in the fall, even though it's going great guns now. But, of course, if it faltered, that affects the election. Mm-hmm. It affects people's pocketbook. If gas pump prices rose substantially beyond $3, then there'd be a lot of finger pointing. So it really, events really are very telling and will have an effect in the elections.
The prime minister was very prescient in his comment, very very correct in his wisdom.
Well, he was. It's just too bad he kept raising that umbrella and was talking about that Adolf is a nice man.
Jim, I was talking to Bill Brandt earlier this week right. about what our politicians and about I asked this question. I said, do we have the kind of politicians that are the kind of leaders that we need? Do we have? I was questioning right. the quality of the politicians of the political right. class that we have right now. And here's what he said, and I think he makes a good point. He said Americans have the politicians that they deserve.
Well, I was.
And he's talking about what. And his point is, if we're not prepared to be more to educate ourselves more, if we're not prepared to understand the issues more, if we're not prepared to spend more time, requiring more of our politicians, the candidates that aren't politicians yet, they're just candidates. If we're not more prepared to hold them accountable for before they get elected and after they're elected, if we're not prepared to be more involved in the whole process and we don't like what we get, well, then we probably deserve what we got. And that was his point. Now, what do you
well,
think?
Well, and Jim, you had made that point just essentially going into break before, and I was going to say, but that is an excellent point. And you might just say, is it these members of Congress, is it these politicians, or is it really more of us? The thing is, people say, oh, well, they spend money and this and that. But the fact is that, most incumbents are reelected almost
right.
every year. And
the incumbency is a very powerful force, isn't it?
It is. But ultimately here, it's the fact that most people in those districts, which is all districts just about, basically say, okay, and they keep pushing the button, pulling the lever, and reelecting the same people. Some have more money than others, yes, but ultimately it's the people that decide. And we pretty much have been saying the last 10 years or so, and basically the last 4 or 5, yeah, we think it's fine. So, in essence, of course, they reflect the popular sentiment. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, I know we see it at Kiplinger, people are really very much divided and polarized on issues. And I'm saying, sometimes even with talking to various people who are calling in or writing to us at Kiplinger about a particular
right.
thing we write, and people say, mm-hmm. you're a Republican, you're a Democrat, you're out to get them. And we say, we are not, sir, ma'am. We're just letting you know what we think. But there is that polarization, and it's reflected on the Hill.
Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about the economy and other issues right after these messages with our good friend Jim Ostrowski.
Mm-hmm. Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Wonderful, at your service. It's good to have you back. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. And don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter, to my blog. Both of them are free. And they come in with two different technologies. One, the email, the newsletter comes by email. The blog comes by Real Simple Syndication. Both of which, well, at least the Real Simple Syndication, you can get that technology. We'll show you how to get that right on the website. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. And those of you who've been using the blog, we thank you for that. We're glad you are. Glad you're taking advantage of it. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's with Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what goes on in the world these days. Jim, let's move over and talk about, on page two, about the economy. You mentioned the economy a few minutes ago as an issue, and I couldn't help but think about Mr. George H.W. Bush, Bush 41,
yes,
who had a 90% approval rating
right
at one point in time, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, less than a year later, because the economy was softening, it actually wasn't in the going in the tank, but people didn't know that, he lost the election largely because of that.
Absolutely, and it's interesting here that when the first President Bush rating was so high, right after actually the Gulf War, coming into the 92 election season, there were a number of Democrats, high-profile Democrats, who were looking over here to make the run, and they just said, no way, you know, I'm not suicidal. And that permitted, once again, a fairly relatively unknown governor from Arkansas ultimately to win the White House.
Oh, yeah.
After, you know, concerns about the economy. And it turns out
I'm convinced, Jim, that Bill Clinton, that the only person, there was nobody on the planet who was more shocked that he won that election than Bill Clinton was.
Well, I think, you know, maybe at the very end he thought he had a better chance.
But
for the longest time, I mean, it was a long shot, an extremely long shot. And but also I have to say, in some of the commentary, in a way, sort of, we've talked here about a lot of the bad stuff on politics, American politics. That was yet again another, in a way, an affirming moment. I'm not making a comment about the candidates, but again, I mean, a situation where still, you know, people can turn out or turn in, you know, a party, a candidate,
right,
and basically overturn the government very peacefully.
But the last time this happened, the Republicans had a contract with America, and they stood for something.
That's
now,
right.
You might not have agreed with what they stood for, and I
That's
understand
right.
that, but they did have a plan. Today, the Democrats don't really have a plan to take over. They just may get it by default. It may just be so disgusted that they may move on, but they may want to you know, move on with their vote. But the big issue that could be up for grabs between now and November is the economy. And you guys point out that you think that if there is a slowdown, that we should have a soft landing. Tell us why.
You might say the odds really are for a soft landing in the economy. You know, the thing is, and again, it's relative. Right now, with soft landing, it's saying because in the first quarter, U.S. GDP growth, economic growth, was 5.3%, which is very strong. So, you know, we're saying from there, you know, we feel that there will be somewhat of a slowdown in spending by consumers and business. In part, of course, it has to do with the housing market cooling, not collapsing, cooling. And yes, we have higher energy costs and interest rates are edging up. But inflation is not a big worry over here. And if it was, I mean, you might say all bets are off because we could see the Federal Reserve continuing to hike rates, and
right,
that would surely lead to a decline. But they're not going to do that. So things will just cool slightly. And it'll be closer to a Goldilocks scenario than not.
Right.
Not
one of the things, Jim, that I, before we go to a break, one of the things that I'd like to point out to people is there are a lot of people out there trying to tell you that we're in a bad economy. Now, I don't know which ball game they're watching, but they're not watching what the ball game is happening in the marketplace. And so, folks, when you hear people say we have a bad economy right now, look around you and see what's going on in the economy. Look at the indicators. You can pick those things out. And when you hear people say that we are in a bad economy, that there's, you know, got all this stuff wrong with the economy, you know, make sure you make them ask them, what is it about the economy that you don't like? Tell us where the bad stuff is. I'd be curious. And then let me know what they say. It's 20 Tales. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Jim Ostroff. Baby, I need you. All of these things, baby. I'm alone in the dark, even though. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff. He's Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, folks, I encourage you to check out their website, kiplinger.com, and also their publications, the weekly flagship Kiplinger letter that I work off of every week with Jim or Joan Pride. And we also have, they also have three biweekly letters, the agriculture letter, the tax letter, and the California letter. They got a magazine that you can find on newsstands or subscribe to, right, Jim?
Oh, yes, Kiplinger Personal Finance. And do have a toll-free number which you can subscribe if you'd like. And let me just provide that. It is 800-544-0155.
And you can subscribe on the Internet if you want, and I encourage you to check it out and try their 30-day free trial. They'll let you have these publications for 30 days without charging you, and if you don't like them, then you can forget about it.
Right.
Jim, let's move on down and talk about the health care costs. You know, for a number of years now, multiple years now, we've had double-digit increases in health care costs. According to Kiplinger, is that easing off a little bit?
Relatively so. We think this year, employers' health care costs will rise by about 9% following a number of years we saw double-digit gains.
Yeah, and 11, 12, 13, 14%.
13, 14, even 20%. And,
yeah.
it's basically due to somewhat easing of the growth, you know, in the utilization of healthcare services.
Well, I think one thing that's happening, Jim, is something that I've been espousing on the show, and that is that more and more Americans become healthcare consumers and not so much healthcare patients, that we've become smarter in the way we spend our dollars. We're also, more and more of us, Jim, have control over those things because more and more of us have health savings accounts.
Health savings accounts, and exactly. And then, for instance, more people saying, yes, I prefer, I will ask you, physician, whatever, to prescribe a generic drug.
Right.
Same, but less cost.
And more outpatient surgery, things like that.
Right.
I have a friend who's having his heel, his Achilles heel, major surgery on his heel today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all outpatient. He's going to be home tonight.
Right. And, of course, though we hit on health care, but that, of course, is a tribute to advances in, you know, health care and medicine.
Right.
The fact that, I mean, it's more than just pushing you out the door, you know, is that it can be done in a minimally invasive way,
mm-hmm.
so that you are able to be up and out the same day or the next day, where, you know, some years ago, even as a precaution, you might stay 3, 5, 7 days in a hospital. So,
and one of my soapboxes, Jim, has been, and it's going to continue to be, once we get small business health plans, when we get that passed, which we've still got a lot of work to do,
right.
I think that'll go a long way towards lowering our overall health care costs, especially for small business owners.
Absolutely. It will be, no question. And that day will come.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yes.
Jim, let's move on down and talk about web advertising, webvertising, as I think you call it. You reported on this week. Tell us about what that means.
Yeah, basically, excuse me, online internet advertising has been growing, 15, 20% a year. What we're seeing now here is that that local online ads, mm-hmm. local advertising, is growing mm-hmm. even faster. And what we're saying here is now, thanks to advances in technology and more penetration of high-speed internet connections, it is becoming possible and it's becoming desirable for businesses, you might say, for local businesses mm-hmm. to advertise locally on websites. And the thing is, over here, it's great, you know, that people can go and, you know, in any a town in anywhere USA and try to sell their goods or services nationwide or even overseas. And that'll continue. Well, it's growing. But here,
well, one
people
thing,
locally, yes.
Go ahead, Tim.
I'm saying that, but now, you have people who are looking really just to sell their goods and services to residents of their community or surrounding
communities.
That's exactly
right. And see, you can do that by if you have a bed and breakfast, maybe you should be advertising on the local jeweler's website or something like that. That kind of synergy. But another thing, Jim, there's a company that I'm familiar with that I don't have anything invested in them. They don't mm-hmm. have anything invested in me. I just know them. They're a good company. It's called Leads.com, LEADS.com, and they are what they do is they provide local businesses with local prospects. It's a national company, international company, but if you want to get local companies, local businesses, and consumers to do business with you, you do business with Leads.com, and they'll work that out for you. And it's a great technology.
They do, and I got to say, no surprise. Once again, our economy, our system is generating many of these local services. They realize right. there's a benefit there, and you benefit. Of right. course, you go in with your eyes open on these things, but
absolutely. Well, the good thing about this Leads.com thing is they're basically guaranteed their performance.
But they
encourage people to check that out. And one thing you can do if you go to Leads.com is you can educate yourself on how all this works, what Jim's talking about. And as I said, folks, those people don't pay me a nickel to say that. I'm just trying to turn you on to a capability that you might want to use and certainly get educated better about. Jim, when we come back, I want to talk about the issue over immigrants speaking English. This is a big controversial issue. Somebody heard an immigrant singing the national anthem in Spanish the other day, and they got all excited about that. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to also talk about some technology, some other technology that's coming around the pike. And we'll do all that right after these messages with our good friend Jim Ostroff. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. It's 10 till. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. We're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff, and he's with the Kiplinger Editors, and that's what we're talking about today. Jim, Kiplinger says that some folks are getting a little indignant about making sure that immigrants learn how to speak English. Talk to us about it.
Well, yeah, in conjunction with this immigration bill, there are those, and there is a bill in Congress that would put this mandate, ultimately, that, well, say officially that not only is English the official language of the United States, but that all government agencies at all levels, for instance, must only communicate with people in English, whether it be
verbally. See, I think this is a good thing, Jim.
Right. Right.
I'm in favor of this. I have been. This is an issue. There was an English First movement back in the late 90s that I covered on this show. Mm-hmm. One of the first public policy issues I ever covered way back in 97 and 98 that's kind of died down over the last several years. But I believe that, you know, America speaks English. And I think if you come to America and you want to be successful, you should learn to speak English.
Well, and that's the point, you might ultimately hear, that most people feel and say and advocate. They say, you know, if you're ever to advance in this country, you need to be facile in English.
Right.
And ultimately, that's we do not think that the national mandate will pass Congress. We don't. But there is, I mean, a even broader issue here in terms of our country and our competitiveness, which is, you know, our relative, relatively, the fact that most people, if they can speak English at all, but they do not speak other languages.
Right.
And as our economy...
Well, we need to make sure, in my opinion, I think they're right, those who think that we should be speaking English. I think it troubles me to see the languages, so much of our communication in multiple languages. It really troubles me. I think that if you live in America, you ought to speak American.
Okay.
You ought to speak English, I should say.
Yeah.
Jim, let's move on down and talk about technology. The cell phone like service for laptops. What's that all about?
Basically, I mean, it's a system that you might say can really just smooth the web connections for people really just about anywhere in the U.S. Where a cell phone works. And the thing is, I mean, there are various companies, Verizon, Wireless, and Sprint, and
right.
others, that have basically it's a nationwide, you might say, web hookup for laptops.
You can literally be going down the road in your car, connect your laptop. Or if you find yourself at an airport, you want to get connected, you can plug the little device into your laptop.
Into your laptop
and through cell phone connection, you're online.
Right, right. And Singular has the same thing and others.
Right.
But it's basically just more options and more ability to stay in touch and be in touch anywhere, for better or worse. But
right.
there are many places where, you know, perhaps perhaps cell phone service is not the best, and here's another option. And,
right.
and we think it's going to be growing and going.
Well, and there's no question about it. And, in fact, this is a new technology that we're not, I should say new. It's not that new, but
no.
It's a technology that we're looking into for ourselves as I travel around the country. And it seems to me there, as you said, you mentioned Verizon and Singular. There are a number of companies out there. It seems to me what I'm going to want to look for are the companies that have the best coverage. That's
mm-hmm.
what I'm looking at. Jim, let's wrap up with the energy issue. What are your thoughts on the energy issue for 2006?
In essence, here, you know, there are a lot of issues on the table. People looking at high gas pump prices, the specter of high winter heating prices. Congress is all up in arms on this and proposing many things. The bottom line is there's a lot of smoke and not much else. There may be a few things done this year, but mainly. Politicians on both sides of the aisle are really just hoping to use this for fodder against the other in the election.
So basically, the energy bill is lost because of politicians.
That is correct. They're punting it down the field until next year or beyond.
So as important as an energy bill is to increase our country's ability to be self-sufficient, to have less expensive, more efficient energy, basically politicians have failed us again.
That's the end of the story for now.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Hey, Jim,
I'm going to have to wrap it up.
Thank you for being here today. Thank you for being here for the last couple of weeks. And we enjoy having you. We'll have you again another day.
Wonderful, Jim. Thank you all.
Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, with the Kiplinger Letters. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I will see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.